doing this work for a long time, they always ask me. They'll either ask me one of two questions. Where are you with your third step decision? And where are you with alcohol? What's the truth about you and booze? And it takes me back to the thing that moves me through the work. And the thing that moves me through the work is the power that comes from 1, 2, and 3. A combination of the truth about booze and where I am with God. Both of my saving graces. The things that I'm either headed toward one or the other. I remember one several times later when I had about 5 on a list in California and I was still in Denver. And I went out to California. This is what moved me to California. Because I can say to you today with all honesty, I did not choose at 4 years to move to Santa Monica. I was comfortable. My sponsor was down the street. I got people to sponsor. I'm serving on the state committee. Treatment chairman. I'm comfortable. I love Denver. And I submit myself to this process once again because I think one of the propositions that I failed to mention at the third step that is probably a valid proposition as you move through this work or at any time in your life or on any given day, I think it's a valid proposition, and that is, am I willing to live life on terms other than my own? And I had gone through this work again, and I had gotten to amends, and I had 5 in California, and I went out for a week, which I had been doing quite a bit because I was in a relationship with a girl out there. She had lived in Denver for a while. Now she was back in California, and I would be there a lot visiting. And I go out to make amends. That's it, period. 4 of them I find. 1 of them I can't find. And that day I'm asked to speak at a meeting that I would never go to at some weird restaurant in Santa Monica. A meeting that I would never have gone to. And I went. And that day I had looked at this lady's name and I had put a question mark by her name because I didn't know where she was and I had said a prayer and I went to do what I was asked to do. And I talked about getting sober in Denver and I told my story and someone came up to me afterwards and said, "Did you get sober in Denver?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "Do you know so-and-so?" I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'm looking for her." She says, she lives three blocks from where you're staying in Santa Monica. The day that I prayed about how to find this person. Then I had the one left, the girl that I had been in a relationship with for 3 years, that I had been engaged to, that I had really harmed. And I called her up and I said, "I need to make amends. Will you see me?" She's in the program. She knows what this is about. She says, "No, I don't think I can see you. But I'll pray about this. Call me tomorrow." She not only called her sponsor, she called my sponsor and prayed about it. And I called her back the next day and she says, "I wasn't sure I'd be able to see you, but I will. On my terms, on my turf. You come to my mother's house tomorrow at 6:00. I went. I told her why I was there and I let her know this. It's amazing what happens sometimes, even when the person is aware of what you're doing, as she was, when you let them know that this is really important to me. Something happens to them. And I told her why I was there, and I told her what I was clear on, and I made the mistake of asking the question, "Is there anything else I ever did that hurt you?" 3 hours later, I'm feeling in the room, I'm feeling this heaviness, blame, shame, guilt, hate. 3 hours later, I made the mistake of asking, "Do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you?" 3 hours later, I started to experience a feeling in the room that there was forgiveness and healing, and that shame and that blame and that hate was gone. And all I had asked her was, "Is there any other harm? And do you need to tell me how any of this hurt you?" And then I got to ask her, "What could I do to make it right?" And you know what she said? A person that wasn't even sure she could see me the day before. She said, "Yeah, you know what you can do? You can take me to San Francisco with you next week with your friend Howard on your trip that you planned as a friend. And the other thing I'd like you to do is to be here once or twice a month and go to therapy and find out if you and I belong together or can work this out." Now, not only do I hate therapy and therapists, at that time. Not only do I see no way of being in Santa Monica to fulfill what she asked, nor do I want to take her to San Francisco. By the time this amends was done, I knew that I could do that. And I said, absolutely, you can go to San Francisco with me as a friend next week with my friend Howard. And you know what? I'm going to find a way to be here in Santa Monica once or twice a month, and we're going to go and we're going to do that, whether we resolve this in a healthy way that we don't belong together or whether we end up together. I will do that. But I'm comfortable in Denver, and I got my sponsor down the street, and I got my little home group, and I got people I'm sponsoring, I'm serving on the state committee. And that night, after making amends to her, before we left for San Francisco, I'm having dinner with some friends, and a friend that's not even in the program, a friend's wife. She doesn't even know why I'm there. She thinks I'm there to visit. Says, why don't you go look at this apartment in Santa Monica? I said, why in the world would I want this apartment in Santa Monica? I live in Denver. She says, I don't know. I just had a feeling to tell you that. Go look at this apartment. And I knew that on the beach in Santa Monica, rent would be about $2,500 a month. But then I thought, you know, I just told this girl I'd be here once or twice a month to go to therapy and see if we can work this out or at least resolve it in a healthy way. I'm going to go look at this apartment. Went to look at the apartment. $500 a month, rent control. With a grocery store, a beauty parlor, a dry cleaners, a post office. In the complex, on the beach in Santa Monica. $500 a month, unheard of. I said, I'll take it. And what started to be a temporary place to fulfill some amends turned into a full-time place, and now I visit Denver. And I didn't plan to do that. And I didn't plan to take her to San Francisco. And I certainly didn't want to go to Bobby Earle's therapist with her. To throw that in there a little. And I went. And we resolved in a real healthy way that she and I don't work together. She calls me all the time. We're really good friends. She called me on my 40th birthday. I can't heal something like that. You go to your mother and you want to go through all this stuff, and she says the same thing my sponsor's mother said to him. We don't need to go through all that. It'll just hurt me. And all I've ever wanted for you is to be happy. So I don't call her or see her unless I'm happy. And I get to call her a lot, and I get to go see her about 5 times a year. And I've never had to show up phony. And that's all I did for most of the 17 years I was drinking, is I would show up someone that I wasn't, bringing problems that I had. Haven't had to do that for 10 years. The inventory example that I shared with you about her leaving me, I was engaged to her, too. I don't get married a lot. I just get engaged a lot. Actually, only twice. I was sitting in my home group. This is a hard one to tell. I was sitting in my home group with my 8-step list. This time I had the girl that left me. And I saw that she didn't leave me, but I saw that I had driven her away. And I'm sitting in my home group, and at my home group, it's kind of a funny format. They have a 20-minute speaker on steps 10, 11, and 12, and then they can ask questions, and their crosstalk is allowed. And people can share. And I was not speaking, but I was sharing, and I had the audacity to say, I'm praying for the willingness to make amends. Little kid that I sponsored at one time raised his hand, and in our group, if they start off a question with, is it possible, you might as well just get under your chair because you're in big trouble. And he says, is it possible you're not praying for the willingness to make amends, and you'll know the exact moment that you're willing to make that amends? I wanted to say, how dare you, someone I've worked with, talk to me that way, but in my humble way, I said, yeah, that's possible. How will I know the exact moment I'm willing to make that amends? He says, the exact moment you're willing to make that amends, you're going to hear some really strange noises. And I thought, what? Have you gone absolutely crazy? What do you mean, the exact moment I'm willing to make that amends, I'm going to hear some really strange noises? He said, yeah. The exact moment you're willing to make that amends, you're going to hear some really strange noises. I said, like what? He said, like this. And you know what? The exact moment I was willing to make that amends, I heard a really strange noise. Me, knocking on her door. Then I heard some other really strange noises. Out of my mouth came, can I talk to you about the harm I've caused you? Then a little while later, I heard some really strange noises coming out of my mouth because I said, "Is there anything that I can do to make right this wrong?" And I'm here to tell you, if taking this inventory to someone and reading it all is not against my will and contrary to the way I've lived my life, and then asking something that I'm not really sure about to remove this stuff, and then making a list of people I've harmed and becoming willing to make amends to them all. It doesn't say made a list of people we harmed and became willing to make amends to some of them. It doesn't say made a list of people we've harmed and became willing to make amends to the ones we want to. It doesn't say made a list of people we've harmed and become willing to make amends to the ones we feel comfortable about going to. It says, made a list of people we've harmed and became willing to make direct amends to them all. And I remember about 5 years ago, when I first moved to Santa Monica, we had a guy out from Denver speak at our home group. And he said something that really offended me. And I'm not going to say this to offend anyone, but I'm going to say what he said. He said, "I'm not talking about the 12th step. Because there's a lot of people in AA doing stuff with the 12th step everywhere." He said, "But I'm going to say something about 10 and 11. And what he said was, in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you will find very little past the 9th step. Because people have never finished amends. And a lot of people, just like each of those people in those meetings that said I couldn't, in every meeting I've ever been in talking about finishing amends, there's always been two voices. And it's the same two voices that are within me. One says, can't never finish amends, never be done with amends, can't possibly do that. And the other voice says, yes you can get free. And I know that's possible because I met some people, including my sponsor and a lot of other people I know, who have done everything they can for everyone that they're aware of, for every amends they're aware of, to the best of their ability." So the first thing you say is, what about those you can't find? The book tells you exactly what to do. There are those that can't be found. We send an honest letter. Get it out. Out of your consciousness, into whatever. Pray about where to mail it. Mail it to the last address. Read it to somebody. Mail it to whoever. And hold yourself, if you ever see that person, that you'll absolutely say what you need to say to them. Every amends can be finished. And when I experienced a day, a period of time, and other times since then, through each inventory, where I wake up and from here to here has gone the reality that there's no one in my life that I owe anything that I haven't done the very best to clean up, is a day that I would never have wanted to miss in my life. Because that's the day you can really start doing some stuff with 10 and 11. There's so much more about amends that I would love to share. But I'm really excited because I'm coming up on finishing these amends from this inventory, and they will be finished. And I did set the date, and I will be done with those amends before September 15th. And I was able to do that, not the first time. And I'm not talking about doing this the first time, although doing it the first time was an unbelievable experience. I went from being unemployed for 9 years, and before I was done with my first set of amends, I was made the director of a program for the National Council on Alcoholism. And I can't do that. And I stayed centered on making amends until I felt better. And then I fell into this pattern. 1 through 9.5, 1 through 9.5, 1 through 9.5, pretend I'm doing stuff with 10 and 11, go back to 1 to keep from finishing amends, over and over and over. And I thank God that I met some people, and I started meeting some people, and I belong to a group that does not buy that from me anymore. And I'm glad I met a man when I told him of that pattern. 1 through 9.5, go back to 1 to keep from finishing amends. 1 through 9.5, go back to 1 to keep from finishing amends. He said, "You are not going to ever do that again." And would not work with me until I finished the 4 amends that I had when I met him from that year's inventory. Don had told me the same thing. But I moved away when I was 4. And I conveniently didn't finish amends a couple times. But I had experienced that day, my second time through the work, where there was nobody in my life that I owed. and I experienced it again when I was 6. I used to think the 10th step was about the instructions that say to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, and fear, and what to do when they crop up. I found out that that's about 1/10 of what you can do with the 10th step. Now, there are those basic instructions. And as you begin to experience the promises, and I think if every consideration at each step can be valid for me where I am in sobriety, I think those promises can be true and valid at deeper levels each time through this work too. I think if I experience a new peace and a new freedom the last time, and my ego begins to tell me there can't be any more than that time, that the next time there can be another level of peace and freedom that I couldn't even imagine the time before, or seeing how far, no matter how far down I had gone, my experience benefiting others, or not regretting the past, even if it's just a year period that I've written about. I remember one of the scariest days in AA when I woke up and my head was literally telling me, and I believed it for a minute, that I had done such damage and told so many lies and caused such harm in the last year when I was around 5 years sober that this work and the power of God wouldn't even fix it. And I was lost, I was alone, and I was afraid. And something moved me to do this work again at 5 years. And came out of that and saw that stuff that I no way thought could be healed. After all the stuff I had seen healed. Made amends for that armed robbery. My mother, my family, friends. I went to Battle Creek, Michigan once, after being there 4 times before amends. And every time I'd go to an AA meeting with a friend that I grew up with that's in the program now. And afterwards, we'd always go to this club for coffee. And I'd been there 4 times recently in those first year and a half. And every time I went to that club, I'd see maybe one person from the past and a little tense. When I went to Battle Creek, Michigan, ready to make amends, and I went to an AA meeting one night with my friend that I grew up with that's sober, and went to that club, I had a list of people in Battle Creek that I needed to see. 13 of them walked through the doors of that club in chronological order that I knew them, and I got to make appointments to make amends. And I'd been there 4 times in the last year and had never seen any more than one of them. I know people that have thought they would never find somebody, get ready and get placed in this position and get into amends and pull up to a red light in Los Angeles somewhere and have next to them in the car the person that they were looking for that they never thought they could find. I think absolutely amazing things can begin to happen in the 9th step. I think if any one of us can ever experience a day where consciously, in our conscious, there's nothing that we're aware of that we haven't done our best to clean up, and there's no one that we haven't approached or done the best we can to approach, to see, can experience a day when there's no one in our life we haven't done that. The 10th and 11th step, even though it says we commence 10 and 11 as we cleaned up the past, that doesn't mean that it's not different and that you can really start doing stuff. Because this has been true every time for me. You're making amends for your first time. You're making amends for your umpteenth time. And you can do certain things with the 10th and 11th step. You can do certain things with the 10th and 11th step before you even start this work or at the beginning of it or when you're brand new. You can try to pray. I've been able to pray since the very beginning when I'm willing. I've been able to try to get quiet and meditate. But the sad thing about 10 and 11 is that people think that the short form on the wall is all there is. And you go through this work and you find out, my God, there was so much more to one than admitting that I'm powerless and that my life was unmanageable, and it was right in here. There was so much more than the short form. And with 2, there was so much more than coming to believe. And with 3, there was so much more than the short form. And 4, and 5, and 6, and 7, and 8, and 9. And you get to 10, and the ego says, all there is to 10 and 11 is what there is in 1 through 9. And all there is to 10 and 11 is admitting when you're wrong, continuing to take inventory, finding out about prayer and meditation. And once again, my ego has convinced me, all there is to the 10th and 11th step are the short form on the wall. Is what my ego tried to do at each preceding step. Keep me where I am. There can't possibly be any more. This is it. I've done about all there is to do. And once again, I'm sold short. I used to think that all there was to the 10th step was continuing to take inventory. I believed these people that said, 10 and 11 are summarized in 1 through 9, and oh, and the biggest lie of all, 10 and 11 are the maintenance steps. It says right at the beginning of step 10, our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. It doesn't say our next function is to maintain anything. Isn't there anything beyond the 9th step? Isn't there more than where you're taken from amends? 10 and 11 have not been a repeat of 1 through 9 for me, although they are about continuing to take inventory, however you choose to do that. Some people do it every day. Some people do it every week. Some people do it with stuff that seems to stick there you can't get free of. Some people seem to do it every year. It doesn't matter how you continue to take personal inventory. But you should. It talks about a business, and we're just like a business, which takes no regular inventory, usually goes broke, and I have gone spiritually broke from not continuing to see where I'm at with resentments and fear and relationships. Yeah, that's what the 10th step is about. And it is also about continuing to admit when you're wrong. But there's so much more. And I thought all there were, or all there was, were the instructions of what to continue to watch for. Selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear. And when they crop up, ask God at once to remove it. Discuss it with someone. Make amends quickly if I've caused any harm. And begin to learn how to resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. It's an important part of the 10th step. It's a great thing to learn how to turn. I don't always have to do all three of those things, but I know what the barometer is. When one of those things crops up for me, selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, self-seeking, fear, any of that stuff, the barometer for me when I'm free of it is when I can turn back to where I was, back to here, back to now, back to you, back to someone I can help. And when you're at work and you're at your desk, the person you can help is your boss. You don't have to go through all these gyrations and harm your boss by having to leave your desk or get on the phone for 50 minutes with someone in AA and take away from your job and the money you're making for your employer to get free to turn back to where you're supposed to be. The 10th step is about being there in the moment for your life, showing up for your life. And that's about all I knew about the 10th step. And then they give you some promises, some great promises that are not part of the 12 promises that we hear when people are selling the program short. Great 10-step promises. We've ceased fighting anything or anyone. Is this book just a book of ideas, or is this book filled with things that I can actually experience? Well, if I've experienced everything up to this point, can I really be taken to a place where I'm not fighting anything or anyone? And when I start to, there's something I can do to turn out of the fight, to turn out of the resentment, to turn out of the fear, to turn back to someone I can help. I don't know how to explain this in words, but I understand it in my mind. One of the things my spiritual advisor taught me was that there is a difference between turning your thoughts to someone you can help and having to look for someone you can help and turning your thoughts to someone you can help, because there's always someone there you can turn your thoughts to. She also taught me the difference between waiting for those things to crop up and watching for those things to crop up. She told me to describe once to her what I was doing with the 10th step. And I was like the guy who goes down. Have you ever seen these people that drive up to green lights and stop and wait for them to turn red? Because they're so full of fear they can't move through the green light. So they have to wait for it to turn red before they can stop and then move. That's what I was doing with the 10th step. And she said, you don't want to go through your life waiting for those things to crop up with your little shield ready to do battle with them. You want to move through the green light, looking both ways, watching for those things to crop up. And I learned the difference between waiting and watching. And these promises are great. Sanity will have returned. Is that possible? Or am I always going to be powerless and is my life always going to be unmanageable? Can the second step come true? Can I be returned to a place of sanity? Well, if I'm clear on what the insanity is, I can be taken to a place of sanity. You know why? Because I'm not interested in liquor. I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally, and I find that this has happened automatically. I see that my new attitude toward liquor has been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. And I want to say, wait a minute, what about all this work I've done? I haven't done any work on my attitude about liquor. I've done work on what's my truth about it? Where am I with God? Myself? My inventory? And I come into the ninth step, and I come through the ninth step, and I'm taken to a place where I have a new attitude about liquor, and this has been given to me. I'm not fighting it, neither am I cocky, nor am I afraid. Nothing worse than to be 10 or 15 years sober and be afraid of alcohol. Because that's the ego convincing you that you can do something about whether you ever drink it again or not. So you're afraid of it. Because part of you knows you can't keep it up. What about getting free of the fear of alcohol? Being placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. Haven't even sworn off. The problem has been removed. And I believe there is a spiritual place, just as there was a place during my drinking, where during my drinking I had no choice but to drink. I believe there is a spiritual place as a result of this work that you can be taken to on the same scale but a different end, where if the problem is removed, there is no choice to drink. You couldn't drink any, even if you wanted to. But I better never forget that that's a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance and growth of my spiritual condition. I believe there is a place, and I have experienced it, where there's about as much choice to drink as there was not to drink. And to me, that's what it means when they say the problem has been removed. Because you know what the problem is? Me thinking I have a choice over alcohol. Then it just gives me a warning of what happens if I let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels. But then there's the most important part of the 10th step, and I always just thought it was an idea in this book, as my ego has tried to convince me with so many ideas that I've read in this book. That's just a nifty idea. Bill was a little lofty. Bill was a little goofy. Bill was a little flowery with that statement. That's not something I could ever really experience, now is it? And there's that conflict once again. And thank God there's always been people that said, you know, you can go do this and you can experience that thing that you think is just an idea. When I met this man a year and a half ago and I had 4 amends to finish, and he said he wouldn't work with me till I finished those 4 amends, I finished those 4 amends and we met again, and I asked him would he help me with 1 through 9. He said, now's not the time to do 1 through 9, you just finished your last amends, let's spend some time with 10 and 11. And he gave me 3 lines to work with, and I spent 12 months in the 10th and 11th step, just working on these 3 lines that I never understood, and I started to experience a little bit. And I think he could have done it with any 3 lines in the 10th and 11th step. I began to experience a little bit about what these 3 lines talk about that I never understood, because I had never experienced them. And what these 3 lines say is, each day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts that must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all that we wish. It is the proper use of the will. And through a series of exercises that he gave me, because of an interest I had in learning about proper use of the will, in wanting to learn about aligning my will with God, through a series of exercises that he gave me, I began to find out about the 10th step being almost all, even if it is following these directions that I read on the previous page, the 10th step is about proper use of the will. The 10th step is about deciding about your life and using the power you've been given to help others and watch what happens in your life. Rather than making decisions that I'm asleep to, that take me to places I don't want to be, and I see them in my inventory, I get to use the power that I've been given in a proper way, even though I make some mistakes and learn along the way, to begin to make decisions that I am awake to end up some places that I want to be. As opposite as it was when I'm confronted with the truth in the 4th step, as opposite as it can be when I'm taken from 4 through 9, and finish those amends and start to really do something with the 10th step. And I started to see what this man meant when he said there's very little in Alcoholics Anonymous past the 9th step. and I started to seek some people out, and I started to find that it was really hard to find people who had done all they could to finish their amends. Well, I still got a few. Haven't finished those yet, because they don't think that finishing amends and continuing to do this has anything to do with them drinking again. They're just like me. The further away they get from step one, the further away they get from step one. I've had experiences a couple times where the further I got from step one into nine, finishing amends, moving on, the deeper it took me into step one, and I remembered, and the experience was there, why I'm doing this. This isn't a good idea. This isn't something to do that's nice or fun. Now, what comes on the other side, and when you really start to learn about using this power and using the will along this line, all that you wish, and you learn about, and I began to experience bringing this vision and what that meant and what vision is to me, and inquiring to people and finding out about it and reading some other stuff. This is where they encouraged me to go out and check out all kinds of things that you might be interested in. I found so many spiritual movements throughout history doing the same things we're doing, that Bill combines a combination of so many different things. And so many people know about meditation. And so many people know about prayer. And a lot of these movements know about surrender and needing power and seeking power and using power in a constructive way. And a lot of them know about using it in destructive ways. And they can teach you about that too. And the price to pay for acquiring power. I always thought there was a price to pay for not doing this work, continuing to suffer from untreated alcoholism. You pay a hell of a price for doing this work too. Excuse me. I think from my experience, I pay a price for whatever I decide. To stay, to leave, to do this work, to not do this work, to stand for something, to not stand for anything. If I still thought I was a people pleaser and believed what I believed in my first inventory, what I used to teach in therapy, because they used to let me do a little group when I worked in treatment drinking. They used to let me do a little group once a week on people-pleasing behavior. And we'd sit in that little circle, and you'd tell me about behavior you thought was to please other people, and I would tell you about behavior I thought was to please other people, and we'd pat each other on the back, give each other hugs, and go out from the group. I came to my first inventory at 7 months sober and wrote about behavior that I thought was to please other people and found out it was to please no one but me. If I still suffered from the delusion that I am a people pleaser, I couldn't stand here at these podiums and talk about what I've experienced, because you got to stand for something. I remember a long time ago when Don told me, Joe, you're always going to have half the room mad at you at all the time. Those that want to get well or those that want to stay sick. You need to make up your mind which part of the room you want mad at you most of the time. And if you're doing your job and you're standing for something in your life, you're going to have some people that really don't like you. I came to terms with that because of a decision I made. Because I never heard anyone in AA say you can get well in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and have plenty of company doing it. There's places you even mention getting well in AA, it's like heresy. Can't they think you mean cured? I'm not cured of alcoholism. That's why I want to get well. I also remember the first time I heard a man say you can stay sick in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous as long as you want if you don't drink, and you'll have plenty of company doing that too. And somewhere along the line I needed to decide which one of you I want mad at me. And I guess I'd rather have those of you that want to stay sick mad at me than those of you that want to get well mad at me, because I believe in standing for something in AA. I don't do this perfect. I make a lot of mistakes. But I can tell you, in doing those exercises right from this book, and it wasn't any fancy stuff, and it wasn't anything outside of this book, with the 10th step, with this vision idea of carrying it into all my activities, what does that mean to me? With prayer, with meditation, with asking people about proper use of the will and what that means to them, I had the greatest year I've ever had in AA from last April to this April. And I had a theory about that period of time while I was in the middle of it. And the theory was this. it feels like, and at the time it was only a theory, and now I can tell you it was true because I've looked back on it. During that period of time, I said to people in my group and people that know me, I said, it feels like this next inventory, even though I know there'll be one, it doesn't feel like this next inventory is going to be filled with, my God, look at those decisions I was making that I wasn't even awake to. It feels like I'm more awake to the decisions I'm making, aware that I'm making them, whether they're right or wrong, whether they're good or whether they're mistakes. I went through that inventory in June, and there wasn't any great surprises as to what I was up to, even the mistakes I made. I was the one deciding. And you hear all this stuff about you can't trust your own will. You can't do what you want. You can't have what you want. You certainly can't do that. To be taken to a place where the tenth step begins to say that you can learn to use your willpower along a certain line between the intent for your life and your intent for each day and the vision you have of your life, and you can learn how to use your willpower along that line all you wish, and you can begin to decide about your life, is an absolutely amazing experience. And I only had a little piece. So I try to do what the 10th step suggests to do throughout the day. And I've tried to work with bringing this vision and asking myself, what is the vision for my life? And what is this vision of God's will I'd like to bring into all my activities? And the way you start to set that up, I guess for me, is in the morning. And it gives me something to do upon awakening. To ask God to direct my thinking. That it be divorced from selfish, self-seeking, self-pity, and dishonest motives. To consider my plans for the day. I remember when the lady said to me, you know what you have to do to consider your plans for the day? And I said, no, what do you have to do to consider your plans for the day? She said, you have to have some. I can't keep in my day timer the rest of this year. I'm a little compulsive, but I keep a big calendar on my desk, and in my day timer, I can only handle 1 month at a time. So I have, like, from now until August 31st, every day there's things in there that I'm supposed to do, that I've been asked to do, that I've committed to do, that I will do, that I'll be there for. Just between now and August 31st, and then I get to look at September with all the stuff that I've committed to do in September. But I can't put the whole year in my calendar, in my file effects. But I can look at today in the morning, and I can consider my plans for the day and ask God, is there anything that stands between me and doing what you would have me do, and is this what you would have me do? And I can begin to experience a place where God gave me a brain to use. And it even says you can come to rely on your thinking. After all this stuff about stinking thinking, and your thinking is no good, and your thinking got you here, the 11th step says you can begin to rely on intuition, and your thinking will be placed on a much higher plane. You will come to rely on it. That's an amazing movement from where I was in the first step. Tells me what to do in thinking about my day if I have any doubt or confusion. To use my morning meditation to ask, what course am I to take? To ask for the right thought or action. And then do a period of meditation that you're comfortable with. Start with a period of time that's simple. You don't think you can meditate? I bet you $100,000 if you have done 1 through 9 and you're making amends or you're finishing amends or you've finished amends, there's no one in this room that couldn't do 3 minutes of meditation. Or 5 minutes of meditation. Or not even time it. Just sit and go in and come out when you come out. Don't even time it. Some people like to use a timer, one of those little things that beeps at 5 minutes. I've always started real slow every time I get two amends and every time I get through amends. But it's amazing how different the day is when you take even 3 minutes in the morning to just sit quietly in a way that's... Find out about how to meditate. Great books. Journey to Awakening by Ram Dass talks about all kinds of meditation, all kinds of books on meditation. Find a way that works for you. In a chair, it's nice to have a place that's yours, private and quiet, in whatever room it might be. It's nice to have that. The rest of it isn't anything formal. It's amazing how different the day is when I start off from a place of quiet. Because I believe this, you'll never know throughout a day if you're off track unless you start on track. If I didn't have some kind of guidelines to get from my house to your house, how would I know if I was off track if I didn't have any directions to get there? Then it doesn't matter when I leave the house to get to your house. I don't know how to get there anyway, so it doesn't matter where I end up. But if I have a place to get, even if it's, I'd like to return home tonight in one piece, in my right mind, without having caused too much harm, I have something to head for, and now I have some directions to get there. Do a little quiet time in the morning. Throughout the day, pause when agitated or doubtful. Ask for the right thought or action. Exactly what to do in the 10th step when anything crops up that's getting in your way from returning home safely in one piece, not having harmed anybody. It doesn't matter what your intent might be. Your intent might be to help somebody that day. But if you don't have a course when you set out, if you don't have any plans for the day, it doesn't matter where you end up because there was no place to get. And being off track won't even be anything that you'll be awake to unless there's a track to be on. But if there is an intent for the day, if there are plans for the day, and you'd like to fulfill those plans and return home safe in one piece, then there's at least a direction to head. I do real well writing my plans out. I just happen to like that. I love to see a thing at the end of the day, a list of things that I decided I wanted to do. I love seeing a list at the end of the day of things that I didn't necessarily want to do, and I was given the grace to do them all. Throw it away. I also don't understand those people that keep in their calendars every other day the rest of that year that's gone by already. That drives me crazy. But that's just the way I am. I don't have every day from January 1st in my calendar. I have today right in the front of my calendar. I can't keep all that stuff that I've done. Some people it works for different ways. I like the idea that I have plans today. I like the idea that I woke up this morning and decided what I was going to do from 9 to 5 and what I was going to do at 5:30 and what I was going to do today at 7. That doesn't mean you become inflexible. At any time, using the 10th step, I can renegotiate anything I've committed to, but I can talk to them. I don't leave them in the dark. I don't not call. I don't not follow through. I don't not show up or do something. I went to work for myself because I got tired of having a boss. I am my own boss. I work in my own home. I have my own hours. And I love the fact that on any given day, if one of you were to call me and say, let's go play, unless I'm in the middle of a major project, which I don't like, so I don't have very many major projects, I like the fact that on any given day, I can say, there's nothing I can't move today and put till tomorrow. Let's go play. I love that. I love having that kind of freedom. But a lot of people would say, it would be so much easier. No, with that freedom is sometimes harder. That's like a lot of people have said to me, having money must be so much easier than not having money. It doesn't matter if you're not at peace. I have been miserable broke. I have been miserable rich. I have been at peace with money, and I have been at peace without money. Me being at peace does not have to do with the amount of money I have. It does not make it easier if I am not at peace. There is more responsibility. There's more headaches. There's more hassles with money as there is without it. My peace is not contingent on income, people, who I'm with, where I'm at, circumstance, or my emotional state. There is a place of peace that I can get to most of the time. And when I can't, there's absolute tools to get me back to that place. Because I think if you had to break 10 and 11 down to what they're really about, they're about being here right now for someone else but me. Free. And that prepares me to practice the 12th step. Every time I've started doing some discipline, and 10 and 11 do take discipline, and they do take deciding about giving yourself to that discipline and letting God discipline you in that simple way. The first thing that always goes for me when I know I'm moving back to a place where it's time for me to do the work again, the first thing that always goes is the evening review. I can be doing great things with prayer. I can be doing great things with meditation. they might start to get a little flat, but the first thing that will go is what they ask me to do when I retire at night, to constructively review my day. I think the most important word in the evening review is to find a way to constructively review your day, because if you don't like doing it, and it's about beating yourself up, and it's not about getting free at the end of the day, so you can be free of it, even though you might have to clean a few things up tomorrow, and being free of yesterday, tomorrow, you'll hate doing the evening review unless you can find a way to constructively review it that you enjoy. But it asked me to go through my day. So I start by scanning my day. And this whole thing at night and this whole thing in the morning only takes me about 15 minutes. I can't give 15 minutes to my life. My God, I give more than that every day to the fellowship. I give more than that every day to service. Do I give that much to recovery? To God? Do I really love God? After all He's given me, what do I do? Can I spend 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes at night and just try to do what it suggests throughout the day? So I go through my day first, just scanning it, get quiet, close my eyes, go through the day. Well, I did this, and I did this, and I did this, and I did this, and then I answer the questions. And it's amazing, when I've scanned the day, the answers pop out of the scan that I've already done. Where was I selfish? Boom. Dishonest? Boom. Afraid? Do I owe any apologies? Have I kept something to myself which should be discussed with another person at once? Was I kind and loving toward all? That's more of a goal than anything any of us will ever reach. I've never had a day when I've been kind and loving toward everyone. Or I've never had a day where I couldn't have done something better. And that's the next question. What could I have done better? Thank God there's guides to grow in this program. What I could have done better helps me set up my intent for tomorrow. If I could have been more loving yesterday, maybe I could try to be a little more loving tomorrow. If I was a little flaky and not to the point with the people that trust me, maybe tomorrow I could be a little more direct and to the point, or a little more loving, or a little more kind, or a little more honest. Was I thinking of myself most of the time? Or was I thinking of what I could do for others, of what I could pack into the stream of life? But I must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. That's not constructive. So I learned to use the 10-step directions to watch for those things in the evening review if they crop up and ask for them to be removed, and turn back to the evening review and continue to do it constructively. I don't need worry, remorse, and morbid reflection in looking back through my day. I need to thank God for revealing this stuff to me so I can get free of anything that needs to be cleaned up from today, so tomorrow I can be clean. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. So the only thing I do at the end of that is about another 10 minutes of meditation. And whatever comes from that meditation as far as apologies, corrective measures, anything that needs to be discussed with someone, any amends that need to be made from today, I just put them in my day timer for tomorrow and I go to bed. And tomorrow I have everything I need in my plans for today to clean up anything that's still stale from yesterday, so I can be there for today. How can you be there for today if you're not free of stuff you did 20 years ago? You can try to pray. You can pray. You can try to meditate. You can meditate. You can try to do what you can with the 10th step. You can try to do what you can with the 11th step. But you're going to see ideas and things in the 10th and 11th step that you couldn't any more do than the man in the moon when you're still confined to things from the past that own you. But when you've reached a day, as I have several times, for periods of time, until there's more resentment, until there's more harm, until there's more work that needs to be done, I have experienced times when I know in a place beyond my head there's no one I owe. I'm clean. Then I can start to be here today and just keep one day at a time cleaned up. Now my ego does what alcoholics' egos do. And if you really want to read about somebody interesting in our history books, AA Comes of Age, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, some of those history books. A man that we don't talk about a lot, and I think I have an understanding why, who was as influential, and this is only a guess, but I think this man was as influential on Dr. Bob as Silkworth and Carl Jung were on Bill. And this man was, name was Harry Thibault, Dr. Harry Thibault. And what he talked about was the resurgence of the ego in an alcoholic having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, how it rebuilds itself. And it starts to take me out of 10 and 11. It starts to convince me I'm not causing any harm. I don't need to do the evening review. I'm not really angry. And I fall asleep again as the ego wakes up. And then as it falls asleep, so I wake up. And then as it smashed down, I wake up. And then as I wake up, it wakes up. This continuing circle between being awake and being asleep, that doesn't just happen from morning to night. And from my ego being smashed to my ego waking up. As it goes, I go. When it wakes up, I fall asleep because that's its job, to keep me out of the now and asleep into tomorrow or yesterday. And then as I wake up, I can be here, right here and now, the only place my ego doesn't want me. Then you really get to do the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. After all that, I've had to go through this grueling first step experience. The first time I was in it for a while. Nowadays, I don't spend a lot of time in 1, 2, and 3. It's just more self-indulgence. Necessary. Time-consuming. But I don't have to spend a lot of time with it anymore because my life is about being there for other people. And for a guy like me to be able to say that I am there quite a bit of the time for other people is not something that I planned on or wanted to even do. And that I care about that most of the time, some of the time. When some idiot from Muscatine, Iowa calls and wants help. Man, I live in Santa Monica. I got things to do. Lots to do. And to want to do that and be there? Because I remember the times that Don was. He had a lot to do. He had a great life. He was there. What if he had decided not to speak that year? Or not to go that night, the first night I heard him? Not to be there that one time when I was there. That's what I think about when I'm asked. Maybe it's that one time when there's that one guy there, just like me. Or you want to complain about having to go, or I'm tired. All that inconsequential stuff. What if he hadn't been there? I have a debt to my sponsor that I could never pay him. And I feel that. Can't ever be paid back to him. It didn't come from him. It was given to me, so now I have to give it to others. I've never seen anybody come through the first 9 steps and do anything at all with 10 and 11 that this doesn't happen for. They want to do this. That's an amazing change for selfish, self-centered people like me. They say, and it's an experience that you're not going to want to miss, to watch others recover, to be a part of this fellowship, to watch others change, to watch families reunite, to watch healing take place that you know neither one of you could have healed. That's amazing. I believe what's outlined in the chapter we're working with others is about how to approach somebody that's not aware of this program. How to hook a drunk. From the approach, to from when he's wet, to from when you hook him, to from when you open when he's open to this program. I believe there's specific directions in there. Not to waste your time. If he isn't ready, you might spoil another chance. For you to decide whether he's an alcoholic or not, it absolutely asks you to do that in that chapter. When you're convinced that he's a real alcoholic, you don't tell him, you don't brand him, you let him find out. how to approach somebody, how to hook a wet drunk, how to hook somebody who's new. But I don't think that chapter goes into doing this work. I think they've already laid that out, how to do that. Taking somebody through these steps is not the same as a 12-step call. Taking someone to a treatment center is not a 12-step call because you dropped him off somewhere. Did you go back? Did you follow through? Did you talk to the family? Were you there when he got out? Did you talk to him while he was there? Did you bring him to AA? Did you ask him, is this what he wants? Did you lay the program out for him to even understand what it is he's supposed to want? Great directions. I like to read Working with Others anytime I'm called to go on a 12-step, if I have any time at all. You usually don't. So I read that chapter from time to time. I believe a lot of people that talk about this book sell it short when they say the rest of those chapters don't have to do with much, and they sell to the employers and to the wives and to the family and A Vision for You short, because I think those chapters are about the second half of Step 12, practicing these principles in all our affairs. You find great stuff in those chapters. I think we all like to find our niche too, but I think sometimes it's great to break out of that niche. The first thing I fell into was the first thing I said I would never do. So I would probably warn anybody in this room about ever saying never to anything in AA. You would probably find yourself doing it within a week. And my first never was, I'll never go back to treatment centers and I don't want to have anything to do with penitentiaries. And within 2 weeks I was on the state committee, H&I chairman for the state of Colorado. And where was I the rest of those 2 years? In penitentiaries and treatment centers. I don't say never anymore in AA. My next niche was working with people one-on-one, and I think that's where it really happens. And that's really what I love. I love sitting in my living room with another drunk, man or woman. I don't have a problem working with women. I'm not going to sponsor them. They're going to have someone that's their sponsor, but if they want to go through the steps with me, fine, as long as there's no interfering attraction. I wouldn't try to take somebody through these steps that I was attracted to. That's silly. Waste of time and terribly dangerous. We got plenty of women in our group that do this work. Send them to a woman. Funny thing happened since this last time through the steps. And there's people in this room that have known me. And I would say a year, 2 years, 3 years ago, I wouldn't say I was terribly angry, although there were times that I was angry. I would say there was a part of me that was shut off that's open now. And this American Indian man that I went through the steps with this time, after the fifth step, he called me before I was leaving Denver, and he said, you know what I really think changed for you this time? And I said, what? And he said, what I really think changed for you this time is I think your feelings changed. And ever since June 25th, it hasn't been that long, but everyone that has come to me for help or that has been attracted to something that I've been given have been women. And they all say, you're so kind and loving and gentle and open. And that's not me. I told them to go ask a few of my friends, and they tell my friends in my home group, this guy is so kind and loving and open and gentle. They say, who in the world are you talking about? Right? It's like another part of me has opened up. Some people find their niche in 12-step calls. I don't do well with wet drunks, but I don't get too far away from it. To remember what a drunk's puke is like, you get too far away from that, or you start feeling mushy about some of the people in your group, or you start feeling mushy about people that drink again, then one day you start feeling mushy about yourself, and boom, alcohol gets you. I don't want to see anyone die from alcoholism. Better them than me. I start feeling mushy about them, I'll start feeling mushy about me. Oh, if only they could have. If only I could have. Oh, I feel so sorry for them. Then all of a sudden I'm feeling sorry about myself. And if only I could have, boom, it's me. I take this work very seriously, and I have a lot of fun in my life. I have a lot of fun. I love having fun. I love playing. I have no problem tapping into my inner child. It's the inner adult that I have had trouble getting in touch with. I love our friend in California who says he comes from a terribly dysfunctional family, and the reason it was terribly dysfunctional was because he was in it. I believe if they laid the principles out in the 12 steps, that the principles I'm supposed to practice are these steps and the principles that come from each one. I believe there are principles within the steps, and I believe there are principles that come from the steps. The ones we all talk about: love, and tolerance, and kindness, and consideration, and unselfishness. That doesn't mean you can't use those things to cause harm. Nothing worse than the dishonesty I use based on virtue. See, your character defects, as you continue on this path and as you continue to do this work, they get refined. And I don't do a lot of the outright lies and stuff anymore. But now I do the kind of stuff where my ego convinces me I don't really want to tell them that because it might hurt them. Right? I don't want to hurt their feelings, so I tell little lies. And virtue has got me once again. I'm not being honest. That doesn't mean I want to say everything that's going to hurt somebody. It's not what I'm saying. It's just that my ego is going to start to convince me to do a little dishonest and selfish and self-seeking stuff with good motives now, rather than the old ones that used to drive me. I think there's some principles in the steps that we don't talk about a lot. I think one of the most powerful principles in our steps, and I think there is I think it is within each step, I think it's a part of every step, is the principle of admission, to admit. Great freedom comes in admission. There's power in admission of truth. Breezing through your day, totally asleep, boom, don't catch it till at night or a week or a month later. You caused all this harm. Where all you had to do was pause and say, hey, I'm being dishonest. And it stops you right where you are and lets you start again rather than just going on and sleep. Could be a month, week, a day, 6 hours, 6 months. The principle of admission. It's in the first step. It's in the second step when I admit the truth about my agnosticism. It's in the third step when I admit about my life run on self-will cannot be a success. It's in the fourth step to myself on paper in black and white. It's in the fifth step to another person and God. It's in six and seven when I admit the exact nature and ask for it to be removed and admit that I can't remove it. It's in eight on paper, an admission of harm. It's in nine face to face with you when I make amends. It's all about 10. To admit when I'm wrong. It's in 11, it's in the morning, it's at night. The principle of admission, to admit, can literally stop me from going any further and free me up to move on when I've turned from something, when I'm off track. You ever had one of those days that was, and you didn't catch it till the end of the night, that was just totally self-will, and you could have seen that you could have stopped it about 2 minutes after it started and just said, hey, this is what I'm up to? What about the principle of decision, to decide? Decide from the very beginning. Is this what you want to do, and are you willing to go to any length? The book says to decide that. To decide about my truth with alcohol. To decide about step two, to make the third step decision. To decide to write inventory. To decide to fifth step and who with. To decide to do six and seven. To decide to make a list. To decide to make the next amends. To learn about using the tenth step from a place of decision. To decide about my life and learn to use my will properly. To decide to do the 11th step in the morning and throughout the day and when you retire at night. That's a powerful principle, the principle of decision. It's really enjoyable for me, when, especially when I've come through a period like I have since June, going through these steps again, and I'm getting ready to finish these last 5 or 10 amends from this inventory. To have a chance to do this on a day where you really finish up, and I'm also, Monday will be my 10th birthday, to kind of come to a... to kind of come to a conclusion of a period of time. A decade's not that much to some people. For me, it's absolutely amazing. I can't take the credit. It's not something that I've pulled off, to have come through this work again with someone that I wasn't open to, who did some stuff that a year ago I was closed-minded about, is not something that I can do. To stand here from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock in the afternoon is not something I can do. I had to pray every time we took a break. To be open to what I was supposed to say today without having to take any notes or practice or even think about it, and not consume yesterday with what I was going to do today, to be there for yesterday and what I was doing yesterday, to really want to be here for each moment of what we've gone through today and be excited about that and be awake to it. That's not something I can do. Then to be able to let this go and move on to the next thing that I have to do tomorrow that I would like to be there for, rather than thinking about how wonderful or how terrible this went today. And I can't do that when I'm not free of the past. And I can't do that if I'm not even free of yesterday, let alone 20 years ago. And I can't do that when I don't start the day off from a place where I'm on track. I would never know throughout the day if I was off. And for me to be standing here today, almost 10 years sober, willing to finish these 4 or 5 amends that I have to finish, in Denver next week, back in Los Angeles, I would not any more in the man in the moon be open to doing if I hadn't made a list and become willing to do that. And you know what? I never would have made that list of people that I've harmed and have any interest at all in becoming willing to make those amends if what blocks me from those people hadn't been removed and something hadn't happened in 6 and 7. And there is no way in the world I would have had any kind of willingness to ask for that stuff to be removed if I hadn't seen the exact nature of it in step 5. How could I ask for something to be removed I didn't know the exact nature of, or that it was even wrong, and hadn't admitted that? And there was absolutely no way in the world that I could come to any kind of admission about that if I hadn't written it out and admitted to myself and taken that searching and fearless moral inventory about that period of time to even see that stuff to admit to you. And there's absolutely no way in the world that I would have even sat down to write that stuff if I wasn't once again convinced about my life run on my will, whether that could be successful or not. And there was no way in the world I could even become open to any kind of an idea of turning my life and my will over to anything if I didn't have some kind of willingness to believe that this power could take me any further than I was when I started this. And there's no reason in the world I would be open to anything taking me beyond where I am if I thought I could on my own power, or that I could manage my life. And there is no way in the world I would even consider any of that if I wasn't powerless over alcohol. So I guess what I'm saying to you is, in a roundabout way, that because I am powerless over alcohol, and because my life is unmanageable, I have on a regular basis come to believe that there is a power greater than myself that can restore me to a place beyond my wildest dreams. On a regular basis, I have decided about that and about my life going on, run on my will. And I have tried to look at the truth about what blocks me from that power and admit that to other people, and ask for those things to be removed. and once again listed those people that I've harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. And today, I want to do that. I want to do that because I want to find out what's in store this time for a period of time before my ego does what it does, that I'm given the grace to stay in 10 and 11 and see what happens in the next year. Thanks so much for asking me to come.